Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We are the last generation to remember what it was like not to have smartphones, not to have the internet. I so clearly remember, I think I was about 10 years old when we got our first computer for our family. I think it was a Compaq computer, and it had a giant cube monitor screen, so heavy. When we first got it, we didn't even have the internet on it. But I think it's important to ground us in how quickly life has changed when it comes to technology and childhood and our relationship to it. I mean, we were the last generation to not feel the good and bad ways of being always connected. Sometimes I think about those times and how, as I remember them, they felt more peaceful and more calm in a way that always plugged into my smartphone and always having new sources of brain stimulation. As I think about that as a parent, I'm constantly navigating and negotiating it with my kids, whether it's to get a smartphone, at what age, thinking about what cybersecurity means for a kid. What does it mean to protect one's identity when we live in this hyper-connected world? I know that as someone who's so connected and maybe even addicted to the smartphone, I don't want that for them. I want a healthier, more thoughtful relationship, but it's not perfect. And we're doing this as a generation. We're learning as we go. Part of learning is talking to experts, people who are a little bit ahead of where we might be in our knowledge about these things. So to the first digitally native generation, the last generation to remember what it's like to not have the internet, this episode is for you. Hey mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy. I'm a co-founder of Motherly, and I am a mom of five myself. Today's guest is Ann Cutler. She's a cybersecurity expert and a mom of two. She's director of communications for Keeper Security, and her company recently ran a survey of parents about their practices around how to keep their kids safe online. And they found that most of us have a long way to go, and I know I do. So in this conversation, we talk about all the things, the new things, really, these emergent things that parents need to be thinking about when it comes to keeping our kids safe and raising children in the digital age. She also talks about why it's difficult for a lot of parents to have an open dialogue with their kids about online safety and really the best ways, the most straightforward ways to have those conversations. And Anne also provides some really practical steps that we can all take today to make our families more secure online. This is such an important topic. I learned a lot, and I know you will too. Anne Cutler, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Liz.
All right, so take us back. What did you think motherhood was going to be like before you became a mom yourself?
Oh, we're starting out with a big question. Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I was actually never a kid person. Like I knew I wanted to have kids, but I never really liked them, which seems like an inherent problem when you're going to have kids. So I didn't know what to expect. I never babysat as a child. I hadn't spent a lot of time with young kids, and I just dove in. I was actually one of the first people out of all my friends to have a child as well. So my first baby was sort of just raised by a bunch of other adults and not around other kids. So we just took it as it came, and both the kids were born in New Orleans. So they had very fun upbringings in their early years. I don't know if it's what I would have expected, but we just kind of took our own path and did our own thing and had a great time at it. I think it's more fun than I probably expected.
Yeah, I love that. And thank you for being so honest about, I don't know, your ambivalence in some ways of like, not every woman feels born for motherhood and they become moms anyway and have to navigate through that. I don't think we talk about it enough. Can you tell me a moment in your journey where you felt yourself either falling in love with motherhood or an aspect of this role that you didn't see coming, whether it's something specific about your kids or who you became in that process?
Yeah. I don't think it was one actual moment, but more of a realization. As I mentioned earlier, my kids grew up in New Orleans, so we were constantly eating at great restaurants and going to parades and listening to live music and all of these things. And when I thought about having children before having them, I thought that would be kind of this switch would flip and you're a mom and your whole life is being a mom. And so when I came to the realization that I can still be me and do the things I love to do and bring a kid along with that journey. And I don't have to live for my kids. It can be a mutually beneficial relationship where, you know, we get so much out of them and they get a lot out of us and we can still do the things that we love. That was a really big realization for me. So my kids, they're the ones who grew up going to fine dining restaurants from the age of, oh my goodness, 1 month old and straight through to now 6 and 9 years old. We never questioned stopping the things that we loved and not going to this restaurant because we couldn't, or going to see live music because we couldn't, or bringing them on a vacation or whatever it may be. So that was a really cool realization for me that I don't have to give up who I am. And it's not selfish to do that. I think it's healthy to have both of that. And don't get me wrong, I still have soccer all day long on Saturdays. But, you know, I try to hold on to my own identity, and being able to do that was a cool thing for me.
It's such an important paradigm shift that so many of us are living through as this new generation of moms. And, you know, we talk about this topic a lot on the podcast, but you said how you felt like that perspective that you brought to motherhood was mutually beneficial, not just that you were mothering in a way that was more fulfilling to you than the martyrdom framework, but that your kids are benefiting. So in what ways do you think your kids benefit from you feeling like you and keeping those parts both for you and sharing it with them?
I think they benefit greatly from it. And hey, I am not here to say that this is the right way to do it. This is the way I do it. And this is what has worked for me and my family. I actually had a laugh because last night I was talking to my 9-year-old about, I don't even know what it was. And I go, Bo, you're an adult, act like one. And I'm like, oh, you're 9. But we have always treated them as adults and spoken to them like adults. Baby talk wasn't a big thing in our household. We love them, we hug them, we kiss them, all the things. But we did so in a way that was maybe not as, I don't know, it wasn't as babyish when they were a baby. You know, does that make sense?
I totally get it. Our culture, in my opinion, takes women and then we jam them into the baby world, into their life being centered on babies. Instead, on your own journey, you've said, I love who I am. I love what lights me up, and I'm going to do what I can to bring my kids into that world. And it's a different model that I think can be liberating for those of us. And I, as a new mom, again, I will put myself in that camp, like time to time, like you just feel you've been consumed by the raising children in some ways. And so I think it's just interesting to hear from other people who try to take an authentic approach for them navigating the demands of raising kids. All right. So today we're going to talk a lot about raising kids in the digital age. And when I was preparing for our interview, I thought about for me, this core memory of before my family had a computer and after. So for me, I was in fifth grade. I remember my mom was really into technology, and I remember we went to a computer store. I think it cost $2,000. And this was, I don't know, 25 years ago. And that first computer, you know, it didn't even have the internet. We played games on this computer. And then later, maybe not that much later, we got the dial-up. And every once in a while, my husband and I like sing the dial-up song to each other. And we're like, our kids don't even know what this means. Yeah. Exactly. Tell us your story of joining the digital age as you were growing up. What do you remember about that transition?
Oh my gosh, it was a different time, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? It was.
You know, my brother, my grandfather were super into computers early, early on. I am not young. And they were way ahead of the game. So I actually always remember computers being a part of my life. But I also owned a typewriter, which just sounds ancient.
Me too. I loved my typewriter. I loved it.
And I had a cool electronic one. I mean, this is like embarrassing to say this, but yes, I think my mom still has it, my closet at home. But we always had computers. And from very early on, I remember the floppy disks and then the hard disks and then the CDs. So I was exposed to technology for a very, very long time. I'd say I probably grew up with it maybe a touch earlier than some of the other folks my age. And then I never studied it. It wasn't something I was into in school. When I went to college, I studied communications and political science and then launched a television career. And I was a TV news anchor and reporter for 13 years. And it wasn't until I transitioned out of that and went into communications that I started looking at technology and cybersecurity. And that's where I am now, and became really passionate about it really quick. So I think all those experiences with my grandpa and my brother, who is an engineer, who's brilliant, but I think those experiences kind of shaped me and really molded me at a young age. And now that I'm in this field, it is something that I really care about a lot, and I see it as a platform and an opportunity. And I was so thrilled when I was invited to come on, because I thought, wow, how often do you get to talk as both a mom and a cybersecurity expert? You know, that's a pretty fun combination. Very niche.
I love that. That's what we're all about here. You can't divorce those two parts of your life. We want to hear about both here. So let's start there. As a mom who is also a cybersecurity expert, what does screen time and boundaries around digital look like in your family? And then I guess I also want to ask in a more positive sense, what is a good view of what all this technology does in the lives of kids? So boundaries, and also what's your goal here and the way that you think about it with your own family?
Yeah. Boundaries. That's usually me at like 7 o'clock at night screaming, get off the iPads. Those are the boundaries. Again, as I said earlier, I am not a perfect parent. We're all figuring it out. And I think certainly my children fall victim to the trap of screen time, like every kid on the planet probably does. They love their devices, and I limit. I balance. I try to keep them well-rounded. They do sports. They love to read. They love art. And they do love watching movies and playing Minecraft as well. So it's all about balance and really striking that and finding the right amount where they can relax a little bit. They can unwind after school, after the homework's done. But, you know, I don't want it to become all-consuming. One rule that we have is when we go out to restaurants, the rule is, you know, the kids have to sit through dinner. They have to have an adult conversation with us. They have to enjoy it. And then afterwards, when my husband and I want a little time to ourselves, we might let them pop on a screen for 10 minutes or so at the end of dinner so we can have a little quiet time. So it is all about that balance. But one thing that I do that I think is really important is I actually foster learning online and being online and understanding and knowing how to do it in a safe way, obviously, because I work in cybersecurity, but also a way that'll set them up for success. I mean, there's no denying when you look at the rapid growth of artificial intelligence and quantum computing coming on the horizon and the importance of cybersecurity, technology will be such a huge part of our kids' lives when they grow up. And I think hiding it from them is doing them a disservice. I think we need to teach them how to use it in a way that's positive and beneficial for their lives, how to be smart about it, how to be responsible with it, and how to best use it and be set up for success when they're in their high school years and their college years and adults and entering the workforce, because it's going to be important. It really is.
I totally agree. I feel like I have this conversation daily with my husband about navigating these issues with all our kids at their different ages and capacities for responsibility. And I think one of the things that makes it challenging is that most of us did not grow up in a world of iPhones, and we weren't seen how to set safe boundaries around screens and devices because they didn't exist when we were growing up. This is like a whole new world that we have to navigate as parents while also practicing these best practices ourselves. So it's a lot to manage, and it's just a whole category of equipping our kids that didn't exist a generation ago. So your company, Keeper Security, recently ran a survey really exploring how parents keep their kids safe online and ways that we might want to make improvements. So tell us about what you found. I found it super interesting.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I've kind of fallen into this world of cybersecurity. And in the time that I've been doing this, I've realized how important it is for every single one of us. But on the flip side of that, I've realized that people don't realize how important it is. And as a mom, I was the one who said, let's do some parenting research. Let's look into this. And one of the key findings that we found that was really scary is that a third of parents have never talked to their kids about cybersecurity.
How do you define cybersecurity?
Yeah. Cybersecurity, I mean, it is kind of loose, right? But it's about staying secure online. And that looks very different for a government agency who's trying to protect against hackers from a nation state, or a multinational enterprise that is trying to prevent a data breach of all of the information that their company holds. Or cybersecurity for you, for me, for our families is looking at protecting all of our online assets. And that's everything from our social media accounts to our finances. We do all of our banking online. Our retirement accounts are online. Our email accounts and our identity. That's one that's really, really scary, is there's so much information out there about us that these bad actors, cyber criminals, can take that information, piece it together, use a little bit of social engineering, and steal your identity, ruin your credit. It's a terrible thing to go through. So cybersecurity for us is really about protecting all of that. Our entire lives are being led online these days, and there are concrete actions that we can take to protect that and to make sure that we're staying safe and then keeping our kids safe as well.
So let's imagine that there's a mom somewhere in North Carolina who hasn't really made this a priority, might be me, and I have kids on the precipice of puberty. I know that the average child sees pornography, for example, like age 7 online, right? So how do you introduce these concepts to your kid if you haven't really done that yet? How do you start keeping your kids safe online if it hasn't been a top priority on your list?
Well, I will say you've probably done more than you might realize. So let's start there. Don't beat yourself up over it. And it's never too late to start being secure online. One other thing I want to say is there is a difference between cyber safety and cybersecurity. And I do think a lot more people talk about cyber safety than they do cybersecurity. So I can touch on both, but cybersecurity is really my expertise. And that's where the number one piece of advice I can give is to educate yourself. Because a lot of parents, and this is another thing that our research shows, is parents don't themselves know how to create a strong password for their own accounts, yet they're letting their kids go online, create their own accounts, use their cell phones, use their TV logins, use their devices. And so it really starts as a parent about educating yourself. And there's a ton of great resources out there. Read blogs, Keeper Security, I'll give them a plug, and that we do a ton of education. And we have an amazing blog that talks about everything from the different types of cyber attacks you can watch out for, to how to protect your social security number, to the dark web and learning all about that and what it is. So educate yourself. CISA is another great resource. That's the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. A ton of great resources there as well. Once you've educated yourself, the next key step is to talk to your kids and be involved. So if you see them online watching a YouTube video or playing a Minecraft game or whatever it may be, show an interest in it. And that's something that I've really tried to foster with my kids, is being involved. I know Minecraft is not my number one top interest personally, but we talk about it a lot in this household because I want to be involved. I want them to come to me when they have a question. I want to have those opportunities to teach them lessons and to make sure that we have that open conversation and that it's a comfortable thing to talk about. You know, another stat that came out of the survey is 57% of parents feel more comfortable talking to their children about password security than sex education. That's not a very high percentage. That tells me that this is still an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people to have.
Probably for the reason that you said, because parents are realizing that they're vulnerable and they're not following some best practices. So what are those best practices when it comes to specifically cybersecurity, both for parents and then those lessons we want to be teaching our kids? Like, what should we be doing that we're not doing right now?
So a few really, really simple ones that every single person listening can do today, right now. Patch your software, avoid public Wi-Fi, use strong and unique passwords for every account, and enable MFA. Okay, so I'll get into those. Patching your software, what does that mean? All our devices, all our software, all the games that these kids play, they have software updates. Now you get those, they're kind of annoying, get the little alert, whatever it may be. You might put it off. What a lot of people don't realize is that those updates have security patches in them. So there may be a known vulnerability in that software that a cyber criminal is exploiting that could let that cyber criminal into your computer. And I'm not trying to freak people out. This actually happens. These vulnerabilities are really serious. So if you patch that software as soon as you get that update, and even better, install automatic updates, that's a huge thing that you can do. Public Wi-Fi is the next one. That's really important because those are risky. So, you know, just use your phone.
Oh, okay. So yesterday I'm at the movies and they're like, do you want to join our public Wi-Fi? And I'm like, yes, the Wi-Fi is bad in here. Get me on the Wi-Fi. Okay. That was a bad move. Okay.
Yeah, that was a bad move. Man-in-the-middle attacks can happen when you're on public Wi-Fi. They can actually intercept the data that is being sent over the Wi-Fi. And again, that is just an avenue that cyber criminals can get into your devices, worm their way in, and cause some real damage. So avoid that. Great trick is just to use a hotspot on your phone. It's always going to be a safer thing to do. So strong and unique passwords is the next one. What does that mean? I actually have this really stupid game that I play with my kids, and my 9-year-old came up with this. I'm not joking, where he goes, okay, mom, is this a strong password? So why don't I ask you, Liz, give me a strong password.
17 Pellegrino April ? How did I do? I'll never remember it, but how did I do?
You did okay. So you want to avoid dictionary words. Cyber criminals, when they do brute force attacks, will often use dictionary words when they're trying different passwords to see if they can get into an account. So avoid Pellegrino, avoid April. You also want to make sure to have upper and lowercase letters in there. So I assumed that was all lowercase. I don't know. We didn't specify, but you want to make sure that you mix that up. And you did a good job on password length. Ideally, you want it to be at least 15 characters. And you had some special characters in there too. I know it's just a few simple ones at the end, but that's better than nothing. So make sure that you have those really strong passwords for your accounts. It is annoying. I get it. I mean, it's impossible to remember those, right? You also have to make sure you have a different password for every single account. Why is that? Because if a cyber criminal gets a hold of one password, they could either guess it, they could get it through a data breach where your credentials were leaked on the dark web, maybe sold to a bad actor. There's a ton of different ways that they could get it. But if they figure out one of your passwords and you're using that password or a variation of it across 20 different accounts, you're in trouble. It's not a good thing. So what we always recommend is use a password manager. If you look at any cybersecurity expert, any of the government agencies, they're going to recommend the same thing. What that does is it allows you to generate these crazy complicated passwords so you don't have to come up with it on your own and then store it in a secure online vault that's fully encrypted end to end. It's all jumbled into ciphertext so no one can read what's in there. And that way, you know that you can easily go to that vault, get your password, log into every single account without having to think twice about it, without having to remember all these individual passwords, and you are going to be so much more secure. So highly recommend doing that. And then the final thing is MFA. Sometimes it's called 2FA. It's that annoying extra step. And I say annoying because I get it. You just want to log into your account. You want to save it on your phone, whatever, right? If you use the password manager, you can actually autofill and you can include your MFA code in your password manager. But that is huge. There's actually been studies showing that it reduces account hacks by 99.9%. So that's a big deal. So those are four just like really simple steps that you can take today. You have to be proactive about it. You need to make the effort and you need to do it, but it makes a huge difference.
Those are some great examples. I definitely have some work to do there. I know you're not a cyber safety expert, but you are a mom in cybersecurity. So how do you also talk to your kids about just being safe online and appropriate behavior in the digital age?
Well, cybersecurity and cyber safety, they are two different things, but there are definitely overlaps as well. And it really does come down to communication and education. You have to think about cybersecurity and cyber safety the same way you think about physical safety. At the end of the day, you're trying to protect your kid. So you're either doing it in the real world or you're doing it online. And that comes down to having that open dialogue and communication, letting them know they're in a safe place. They can always talk to you, letting them know what's age appropriate. Of course, you can enable the parental settings to restrict certain websites, to restrict access. Do that when you can, if you need to, if you want to, if you feel like that's the right move for your kid, but also explain why you're doing that. And I think that's really important because you don't want to just cut your kid off and shelter them. They need to learn and they need to understand the importance and the value of this. Also, let them know that they can always come talk to you or another trusted adult if they're in danger, if they've seen something they don't want to see, if they're being cyberbullied, if they are seeing pornography. Make sure they know that there's avenues to appropriately report this and just really encourage those critical thinking skills online. Again, these kids are going to be in a world that is run by technology when they grow up, if they're not already, right? So let's teach them those lessons at a young age. Now, in terms of the lessons with cybersecurity, there's some there too that you want to teach. Social engineering and phishing attacks, those are real. Social engineering is where they take the information that they can find on your social media accounts that you put out there publicly and use that against you. I had a neighbor who actually got a phone call. Her dad had been fighting brain cancer, had surgery. And she got a phone call that was allegedly from a local hospital. It was a social engineering attack. This was a criminal who was trying to scam her out of money based on real life information about her family. So you have to be really careful and really cautious. And in the world of artificial intelligence now, phone numbers can be spoofed, voices can be spoofed, websites can be spoofed. So you need to be really, really cautious. Teach your kids what to look out for, to avoid clicking on anything that they didn't expect to get in their email or in a social media message. If the link looks a little suspicious, if you didn't expect it, if you don't know the sender, don't click on it. Same goes with attachments. If you get a file that you weren't expecting, don't download that file. Any of those could lead to social engineering attacks, to malware being installed on your computer, and some pretty bad ramifications.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Is there anything else more broadly about cybersecurity and raising kids in the digital age that you think our listeners should know?
It is such a cool field. It is fascinating. I'll say that when I fell into this field, and I kind of knew I wanted to be in tech, I kind of knew I wanted to be in cyber, I didn't realize how much I would love it and how interesting it would be. So I want to share that with everyone, that it's a really, really cool place to be. And for all the moms out there, there is a huge shortage in the cybersecurity workforce. So encourage your kids to look into it. We need cybersecurity experts who are going to be on the front lines fighting the good fight for us. There is a convergence when you look at physical and digital warfare that's happening, and that's only going to continue. So we need these people who are willing to fight for our nation, to fight for our companies, to fight for our ways of life online in the digital world. So that's something that I love to share with people.
It's really cool. My son last night was for hours coding Scratch and making his own video game and just watching him do things that I've never been able to do was just so amazing. And I know they live in a world that I did not grow up in, and they're going to launch their lives in this technology infused world that has good and bad in it, just like everything else. And so I know we're all doing what we can to help them be equipped, in many cases by setting our own good examples as well.
Absolutely.
So at Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. And I like to always say that doesn't mean that moms are superhuman. We are human beings too. But in my experience and talking to hundreds of incredible women through this podcast, that motherhood brings out sides of us and facets that often we didn't know were inside of us before we became moms, or they transform us in some way, or we can even marvel at the people that we have become. So I'm curious, what do you see as your superpower?
Just figuring it all out. The ability to take whatever comes my way and run with it. I never played sports my entire life. I danced. And guess what? My 6-year-old soccer team was down a coach, and look who stepped in. I don't know how to play soccer, let alone coach soccer. So my superpower would be the ability to just figure it out and do my best.
Love it. See you on the soccer field, Ann Cutler. Thanks so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's it for this episode. And thank you so much. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. The Motherly Podcast is executive produced by Jennifer Bassett. Our senior producer is Marissa Bramwell. Editing is by Joel Edinburg. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.